Welcome to tonight's event, Exile and Engagement, a Palestinian Perspective on Peace and Democracy, held here at Nord Pool, Dortmund, and kindly supported by the city of Dortmund. Thanks for that. Our guest, Hamza Abu Hawidi, is a Palestinian activist, writer, and peace advocate, born and raised in Gaza. He stood up for human rights and was imprisoned and tortured by Hamas. Now living in exile in Germany, he continues to speak out against Hamas, against anti-Semitism, and for peace, understanding between Palestinians and Israelis. We are honored to have Hamza with us tonight to share his story, his insights, and his vision for peace and democracy in the face of violence and repression. One further note from Tom Kalert-Würdemann, who visited us last year, and he had one saying which I kept in my mind. Most of what passes for Israel solidarity or Palestine solidarity on the German left is not a position of solidarity, but enthusiasm for reactionary political projects. Solidarity with Israel or Palestine only makes sense if it is subordinated to a fundamental peace perspective. So we invite you to a critical discussion and debate, but based on respect, listening, and genuine interest. Contributions that seek to delegitimize this event as a whole are not welcome, be it through general suspicion, personal attacks, deliberate distraction from the topic, or shifting the debate onto sidetracks. We will not tolerate the deliberate destruction of this discussion space. Thank you, and now we will start with you, Hamza.
So first of all, thanks actually for the quote. I didn't see it coming, but I appreciate it. And Tom is also a very dear friend. I mean, he actually introduced us to each other. So yeah, before starting, just two simple points. As you introduced me very well, thank you for that. But I also, as I criticize Hamas, I also criticize the Israeli government's actions, the army, the Israeli settlers. The list goes on. There is like, I don't like to do this polarization. Those are the good people and those are the bad people. This is one thing. The second thing, if you expect me to have the magic trick for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, I'm sorry, I don't have it. I'm just going to tell about my personal life and from my life experience, what I can tell, what is wrong and shouldn't be done, and what I think can be a better solution for the current situation. So yeah, I'm Hamza Abu Hawidi. I was born and raised in the Gaza Strip. I was born in 1997, which was a spicy period, let's say, between Palestine and Israel, because it had many events, if we are talking about post the peace accords, then to the second intifada, then to the Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, and the list goes on. So it was a very intense period. I was born in a Rimal neighborhood, which is in the heart of Gaza City. You have the Gaza Strip and you have the Gaza City, which is in the middle. And as everyone else, I was just born there. I did not choose to be born there, and I had to live with all the difficulties that comes when we are a Palestinian or an Israeli in this conflict. And during my childhood, I did not have the privilege, let's say, to see how it was when Israel was occupying Gaza, or to see much things when the Palestinian Authority already also received the Gaza Strip from Israel in 2005. So I was still a young boy, did not have a lot of memories from that. Most of my memories actually came after Hamas took over the Gaza Strip, and I still remember in my neighborhood in Al Rimal, because it was in the middle of the city, you have the government buildings, the parliament, everything, so most of the events happened there. And I still remember the coup when Hamas took over the Gaza Strip, how they attacked the people from the Palestinian Authority or the Fatah political faction in Gaza, and how they started killing them, throwing them from buildings, dragging people with motorcycles, dead and alive. It was lots of terrible memories that shook us, that shook me, and shook everyone in Gaza, because when Hamas came to power, their political slogan, I still remember it, was a change and reform. And everyone was pissed off of the Palestinian Authority. It's corruption. We wanted a change and reform, actually, and many voted for that. But we did not expect that reform, let's say, or that change. And I had this little bit trauma from seeing these events without having any idea what's happening, actually. Anyway, we continued with Hamas, and after Hamas took over the power in 2007, they started reshifting everything in Gaza. It was not a simple coup. For example, they replaced all the teachers in Gaza from the schools, so they put in their own teachers. They took the religious figures, they put their religious figures, and I think we can all imagine what Hamas brought to Gaza. I went as a child to Dar al-Arqam school, which is Hamas own and run school, actually, because there is no much options, and it was very close to the Israeli border, and I was raised there, and there in the school, because of Hamas's teachers and the indoctrination, it was more about indoctrination more than it's about having a normal life, actually, in school. At the age of 10 or 12, I was, like, memorized third of the Quran, most of these scripts, in the school lines, having to sing about martyrdom and how we love death more than they love life, etc. So it wasn't actually a very nice period. Still, at the same time, it was not only Hamas who were oppressing Gaza. We also had the Israeli siege that was all over Gaza, and Israel was controlling the airspace, they were controlling the seawater, they were controlling lots of things in Gaza, which made the life more terrible to the people there. Actually, it wasn't only Israel. We also had Egypt, who were also sieging Gaza. Anyway, I continued with that and had just my normal life until in the university, I had to choose to what university I should go. And because we don't have much options also, it's a small city. So I went to the Islamic University of Gaza, which is also a Hamas owned and run. It's where their leader studies, Sinwar, Deif Hani, everyone studies there. And it was a very intense experience, actually, in this university, because on the one hand, you have to choose what you want to study. For me, I wanted to study engineering, Middle Eastern. My father was engineer, so for sure I will be an engineer. And the first year and a half in this university, I noticed that, yes, we are studying engineering, but it was more about using engineering for military stuff than it's about using it for civilian infrastructure or purposes. I still remember, actually, one of my teachers was Dr. Jamal Zibda, who was more interested in developing Hamas's tunnels, rockets capabilities, more than he was interested in teaching us engineering. I didn't know that until in some of the wars that happened in Gaza, and we have lots of them, he was killed, and they started to announce that this was the guy who developed Hamas's rockets, and I was shocked that I was in the same class where he was teaching. Anyway, after a year and a half, I decided to change from engineering, and I went to the accounting department, and until 2019, I was not active in any way in politics, Palestine and Israel, or even Gaza. But because of the authoritarian nature of Hamas's rule over Gaza, the first requirement when you want to apply for a job in the public sector was to be part of the member, like any authoritarian regime, Soviets, Ba'athist, whatever. And I did not qualify for that, so I was always faced with this thing that whenever I apply to a job, I pass the interview, the job exam, and then I'm rejected. So I started to have some anger on Hamas, and I wanted to express that anger. At the same time, in the university itself, it's a hub where they recruit people. They start to notice who qualifies to be a Hamas member or not, and they started to offer that to us, including me. And when they offer that, they understand that there is also people who do not believe in this ideology of jihad or Islamism or whatever. So what they do is that they offer economical benefits. I'm talking about a car, job. Actually, the minimum salary for a Hamas fighter is more than a doctor's salary in Gaza. So you can imagine the benefits that they offer you. At the same time, you have this terrible economical situation that is caused by both the Israeli siege over Gaza and Hamas's rule, which made the Gaza society as a two layers. One is the wealthy elite of Hamas's members, supporters, leaders, and the remaining society who just struggles to live in this situation. And I saw with my own eyes in the university some people who did not have anything to do in common with Hamas or any opinion about this conflict, but they joined because they were suffering from this economical situation and they wanted better lives. And they also noticed that, unfortunately, since Hamas took over the power in 2007, everyone was dealing with Hamas as if it was a status quo, that it's okay, Hamas is ruling Gaza, no one cares about that, and you will have to live with that. And I'm not talking only about Palestine itself, I'm talking about Arab countries, Western countries, Israel itself, who were also allowing the Qatari money to enter to Hamas on a monthly basis. So everyone was desperate that, okay, we don't see an exit for that. And I saw some of my friends joined Hamas because they wanted these benefits. Thankfully, I did not. And that was until 2019. But before I go to 2019, I just want to show you a small video of my neighborhood, Al Rimal neighborhood, how it was in Gaza for two reasons. One is that I love this neighborhood, but unfortunately what is left from it right now is just ruins. Most of the people who were living there are either killed, wounded, displaced, or whatever. And the other thing is how people also looked to Gaza before, because the majority were looking at Gaza as a dark room. Yes, to an extent it was, but if you compared it to some Middle Eastern cities, in a way or another, it was better. And I think this video does not show a lot, but it will show you just a sign of how we were living in my neighborhood. It's a small video, but I will also try to show another one.
على هذه الأرض سيدة الأرض أم البدايات أم النهايات كانت تسمى فلسطين صارت تسمى فلسطين سيدتي أستحق لأنك سيدتي أستحق الحياة.
Was saying we deserve to live. Yes, we do actually. Yeah, and this how was the neighborhood. And if you looked at it right now, according to the most statistics, if you look to the UN, 70 to 80% of this neighborhood, like 8 of 10 houses are destroyed from this neighborhood. And it became ruins. Anyway, after I was supposed to graduate from this university, I started to hear about a new movement called We Want to Live movement. And this movement was formed from the society itself, from the civil society. And it had only two goals to achieve. One is to have better economical situation because we couldn't continue living with this. The second one is to have elections in Gaza because, for those who don't know, we only had one time elections in our lives in Gaza in 2006, and the majority of us did not attend it. I mean, Gaza society, more than 50% is under the age of 18, so most of the society did not even see these elections but had to live with the consequences of it. So we wanted these elections in a way or another to have another government, something other than Hamas. So we protested in the streets. And it was only one slogan, we want to live. And the moment we entered the streets, immediately Hamas, that was in 2019, and in March 2019, and Hamas sent their militias to us to beat as much as they could, to arrest as much as they could. And unfortunately, I was one of those who were arrested back then, and I had to have this terrible experience in Hamas's jails because they don't just have any red lines. Everything is allowed there, and it's not something that you would wish for anyone, even for Hamas's people themselves. And I was arrested back then, and after a few weeks, my family managed to find a Hamas's official to bribe to get me out of the jail. That succeeded, and after this experience, I preferred to keep my head down because there was no, much media coverage of what happened for the people to see that there is people in Gaza saying we oppose this regime, or human rights organizations to talk that there is thousands of people, more than 2,000 people from Gaza were arrested from the protest. So you can imagine how big it was. We were being tortured in these jails and no one talked about us. So to an extent, we lost hope that people are not interested, actually, in the civilians in Gaza who are trying to change the situation. Kept my head down until 2023 in June, a few months before the war, and we decided to protest again. And it was a crazy idea for me, actually, to do that, because Hamas has a system for those who try to oppose them, and they record. If you protested before and you were jailed before, you are in the system. And now, I'm in a way or another, I'm trying to lead the protest. So we protested again, and it was more numbers, actually, than 2019. The same slogans, without any political attention, without any political attachment or attachment to foreign countries. We protested again, and the same thing happened. I was arrested again, and I had to go this not a nice experience in Hamas's jails. And for them, the moment I entered the police station, they took our IDs, and they realized that I was here before. I protested against them in 2019, so I had to have special kind of experience, if one can say, which was worse than the first one. And the same thing that happened in 2019 was repeated in 2023. We got out of the jail. My family paid the bribe. No media is talking about us. No human rights is talking about us. So I said, it's not my conflict. I can't change it. So I'm just going to leave this trip. I don't care, actually. What happens to Palestine and Israel is not my issue. I don't have any power to change anything. And before I move forward, I just want to show you a small video of this protest.
Osama Khalout can barely sit because he's in so much pain. A young journalist who went to cover the protests happening outside of his house. The hunger protests, as they have been dubbed, have been held all over the Gaza Strip. Osama documented the ones in his neighborhood on his social media accounts and with his camera. Soon after, he says members of Hamas broke into his house, beat him up, and destroyed his equipment. He then says he was taken away and tortured for 3 days.
I knew the sensitivity of covering such an event, and so I didn't want to cover it. I was criticized for that by my neighbors because I'm the only journalist here. So then I went to cover the event, and suddenly Hamas police stormed my house, beating me up, destroyed my kit, and took me away.
Hamas says it's cracked down on the protests because certain groups want to bring disorder to the streets of Gaza.
I don't deny that there are some mistakes, and these mistakes will be investigated by the police. And we are against any violation of the law. We are against using of power against or violence against people. But, you know, some people try to...
This is actually Hamas's spokesman, Ghazi Hamad, who said they're going to investigate. 22 people were killed under torture in their jails. And until now, there is no results of what happened or who should be held accountable for these barbaric crimes, to be honest. And even the accusations in their jails were extremely stupid. One of my friends, Isam Saafin, he was also protesting with us, and the crime he had is to work with the Palestinian Authority. This is a crime under Hamas's law, to work with the Palestinian. I'm not talking about Israel, I'm not talking about foreign countries or America, I'm talking about the Palestinian Authority. He was tortured to death for that, because he's somehow working with the Palestinian Authority. And he wasn't the only one. Lots of people were killed, lots of people were tortured to a bad extent. And after that, I decided just to leave the Gaza Strip and just to have a new life in the West. And I made my own way from Gaza to Cairo, from Cairo to Turkey, from Turkey with these immigration boats or the death boats, actually, to Greece. 1 month after I left Gaza, actually, 23rd of August 2023, just 5 weeks or something like that before the war. And yeah, I made my way to Greece, and 1 month after October the 7th happened, and I started to see the videos, and it was shocking for me. At the beginning, I said it may be Israeli propaganda, it may be Hamas propaganda, because we didn't see such a scale of violence before, even from Hamas against Israel. We didn't see something like that before. And I started to see the videos that was coming from there, and until we confirmed that it actually happened. Everyone, actually, if I know in the report I was talking to, he told me, they opened the gates of hell. We are just registering to leave Gaza Strip to Egypt because we understand how this will end up. they did, and they kidnapped the Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, in 2006, and we saw the consequences for one soldier. So you can imagine they killed more than 1,200, not to mention the more than 250 hostages. And everyone started to register to leave Gaza, including my family, including my close friends. And yeah, we were seeing that. And I saw one video, actually, coming from Gaza, I decided to speak. It was this video when there was a small group from Gaza, 100 to 200 people, celebrating what Hamas did. And I understood back then how this video will be used. Some people will use it to portray that, oh, you have 2 million terrorists in Gaza, you have 2 million people supporting Hamas. They won't understand that the majority of the moderates who oppose what Hamas did, they can't say it publicly. If they did, they will be held accountable for that. And some of them actually did. So I realized that I should speak, that I don't want this moment when I was there in the jail, I was feeling betrayed that no one is speaking about the moderates in Gaza. I didn't want that to be repeated to anyone. That was my only idea. I did not like decide to have something big. I just wanted to be one voice of the moderates in Gaza. And I started to speak. And I did not wait to condemn what they did. Because, yes, on the one hand, we have too many problems with Israel. We have the occupation, the siege, the crimes that happens in the West Bank, but that does not in any way justify what Hamas did. So I decided to speak, and unfortunately, I was in this refugee camp in Greece when I started to speak, and I did this video, slept, woke up the second morning to see that most of the Israeli embassies shared this video, and people who are newcomers from Gaza who are in the refugee camp understood that in a way or another, I'm working with the Israeli embassies. I did not work with them, and I don't have any control on who shares my videos. So I started to have these problems in the camp, and I was threatened, actually, in the camp that if I spoke about Hamas's spokesman, Abu Ubaida, again, the guy is going to cut my neck. And I went to the camp administration to report about that. Their decision was move one to another camp, and that's it. So if he wanted to do something, it's just 1 hour from my camp. And I moved to this camp until I got my papers there, continued to speak when I was in Thessaloniki. And I remember back then, I wrote just an article for Newsweek. It was titled, Message to the Gazans, Demand the Release of the Hostages, if not out of moral obligation, actually, just to save whatever is left from Gaza, because that was in the middle of the war. Back then, part of my family was in Gaza, and they went for my mom in her tent after we lost our home and we moved from Gaza City to Khan Yunis in the south. They went to my mom and they said in Arabic that Dammu Muhallal, which means the moment he enters Gaza, he's dead. It's something like a red list for Hamas, for people who are known to oppose Hamas. My family had to say publicly that we don't have anything to do with him. We don't agree. Talk to him. It's not our problem. And since then, I realized that if I want to speak, I have to get my family out of there. If not, I have to stop, because it wasn't an option, actually. At the end of the day, for me, my family is before Palestine, before Israel, before everything. And I thankfully succeeded to get my family out of Gaza and continued with my activism. But unfortunately, for some newcomers, not all of them, That wasn't acceptable, and they started to harass, threaten me, and to see me something like a traitor of Gaza because I opposed Hamas. That doesn't mean that I was supporting Israeli military actions. All my stance was just criticize what Hamas did, because I'm not supporting the Israeli military actions. Anyway, I had to leave Greece because of these threats, because I also noticed how the authorities unfortunately respond to these things. And I moved to Germany, and in Germany, I exploded with my activism, I would say. I started to go to universities, to events, to the parliament, to every way I can for just a few things, to say that first and foremost, this war should stop yesterday, if not now, actually. And to say that there is people in Gaza who oppose Hamas, and I believe that was clear even during the war when the people in Gaza decided to protest against Hamas, even during the war, during the bombardment, the starvation, the displacement, everything. they decided to tell the world that Hamas is a terrorist organization, we don't want them, and we want this war to stop. That's it. Unfortunately, Hamas also met these people as they did actually in 2019. One of my friends, Uday Nasser al-Rabai, 22 years old guy who has not much opinions about the conflict. He was just, we don't want Hamas, we don't want the war. He was tortured to death. And when I saw the video of his body, it was terrifying. And you can imagine, the reason I'm saying these things is for you to imagine the cost of speaking against Hamas in Gaza, because unfortunately many people don't like or say that the people in Gaza should overthrow Hamas. We tried, and we continue to try, but you also should understand that it's not easy to protest against such a terrorist regime when there is a gun pointed to your head, and there is no one to defend you, actually. That was what happened to Uday, the same happened to Ahmed al-Masri, who's also one of our friends. And yeah, that's how Hamas met these people. At the same day, when I look at these people and I also look at the West, I see a totally different scenario. In Gaza, I see them chanting, Hamas is a terrorist organization, we want this war to stop. I look at the West, I wouldn't generalize and say all of the protests, but many of them actually, especially in the US, some in Berlin, I would say, glorifying Hamas. The people in Gaza who are living under Hamas saying it's a terrorist organization, but here, no, they are supporting them. The people in Gaza say, we want this war to stop, but here they say, no, we want intifada. Those people don't have any idea what intifada was. Intifada, in the second intifada, it was just a matter of suicide bombs. Everyone was scared before entering a cafe or a school bus because of the bombs. And if you are on the Palestinian side, more Palestinians than Israelis were killed in the second intifada. If you are on the Israeli side, mostly civilians were killed from the Israeli side. So I have no idea who are those people who are chanting for intifada. Whether you are pro-Israel or pro-Palestine, it's not an option. It's not an option. And we already have a devastating war in Gaza. So no, we are good. What we want is first for this war to stop and for something to be rebuilt in Gaza. And when I talk about rebuilding Gaza, I'm not talking only about rebuilding concrete buildings and stuff like that. We also have to rebuild the society there. Because it's hard for me actually to say it, but we have to rebuild the society. The people there lived with Hamas, a terrorist regime, since 2006. It's like 18 or 19 years. So we are talking about a period more, I think, than Germans lived with Nazi Germany. So you can imagine the indoctrination those people had from Hamas. They should have programs to de-radicalize this society and what they absorbed from Hamas. And I think in the Middle East, we have lots of examples to learn from, whether we are talking about Emirates, whether we are talking about Saudi Arabia, who were 10 years ago, not a single Jew would think of going to Emirates, but now they have synagogues. The same applies to Saudi Arabia, who were 10 years ago with the Sahwa and Wahhabism and this radical Islam, but now you have Taylor Swift in Saudi Arabia. So yes, we can learn from this experience, and I'm not saying that as a self-hating Palestinian, but I'm saying that because I want to see my society as the best as it can be. And when I talk about that, the same applies to the Israeli side, because I believe, yes, in Gaza we might have more radicalism than it's on the Israeli side, but if you looked at the Israeli society post-October the 7th at least, you have this crazy spike in radicalism. You have some communities who literally protested just to prohibit the humanitarian aid from entering the Gaza, or the crazy terrorist Israeli settlers actually in the West Bank who are attacking civilian Palestinians almost on a daily basis, according to OCHA, which is an organization attached to the UN. In 2024, you have at least on average 4 attacks by Israeli settlers against the Palestinian communities. In 2025, it's 5 actually in a day. So you can imagine how the spike is crazy in the Israeli society, and it's actually affecting the Israeli society itself, because there are crazy groups in Israel right now who are opposing a ceasefire deal or that will bring the hostages back to their families. The families of the hostages themselves started to complain from what's happening there. So yeah, this is a small part from my experience.
Yeah, thanks for all the insights. I would propose that I start with a few questions I have, and then we can open the discussion. So you are all free to come in the front, and we have an extra microphone, so you can ask your questions. But I'll start with the beginning of your talk. You spoke about having difficulties finding a job, and that's why you were part of the movement We Want a Better Life. We want to live. But can you tell me how Hamas was established their rule on an everyday basis? Like, what did the everyday life look for people like you, and especially also for women?
Actually, since they took over the power, they did not leave any safe place in Gaza. Schools, universities, mosques, everything. They spread like a cancer almost everywhere. I can't think actually of an institution or organization that in a way or another you don't have Hamas people there. And that's not to defame the organization itself or the institution, but to tell you how they spread. And as I said, after they took over the power in 2007, they started to replace every employee in Gaza, the public employees, the government's employees. They replaced the teachers, they replaced the imam mosques, they replaced the people who work for the government, and they started their indoctrination even outside of these buildings. Like if we are talking about a mosque, unfortunately, if you ask any typical Gazan, even the conservative Muslims, they stopped going to the mosques because it became a recruitment places for their activism.
And do you think they used religion also?
The thing about the Gaza society is, if you compare the Gaza society to the Middle East, I can't think actually of a society who is more religious than us. Maybe only Saudi Arabia to an extent, but the Gaza society became actually, it wasn't like this. Became after Hamas took over the power, became extremely attached to religion, and they used religion to manipulate people because it's an affront to use people, and it was easy for them. So they started to radicalize the people in a way or another with the religious discourse in in these mosques that became actually very hard to avoid, because every mosque in Gaza became a Hamas mosque, and at the end of the day, those people is a Muslim community who wants to go to the mosque, and whether they noticed that or not, they were being indoctrinated in these mosques. And the unfortunate thing is that they actually started to take the mosque thing beyond the Palestine and Israel thing. There is, I think, a recorded interview for Mahmoud Zahar, who is a co-founder of Hamas. When he was asked about Palestine and Israel, he said that our project is beyond Palestine and Israel. We want to do this Islamic State, and that was in a mosque. And I remember, I don't actually remember what year exactly, but I was in the mosque, and normally in Friday prayers, you have a speech after the before the prayer, and normally an official comes, which is a Hamas official. And I remember back then there was Fathi Hamad, who was an interior minister for Hamas, and he came to this speech, to this prayer. And there was back then an escalation with Israel, and there was some rockets fired, and it was a closed circle. And when asked about these rockets, if it's directed towards a military base or an army thing, he answered that no. And by logic for him, by his logic, anyone who lives in Israel is a legitimate target. And we could have seen that being applied by Hamas when they attacked in October the 7th. It was not only for Jews, because some people say it was only an anti-Semitic attack. It wasn't like this. They attacked Muslims, they attacked Thailand people, Thai people, they almost attacked everyone. There were actually people from Gaza who were working in Israel in this day, by coincidence, they were there and they were killed. And there is a video for that. When they were asked, they were like, you are working for the kuffar. So you can imagine this mentality that sees everyone as a legitimate enemy. Also in the university, I remember in the Islamic University, I had one course of Islamic Sharia law. And I remember our teacher, how upset he was, because we had this small Christian library close to the university, and he was in the mood that Hamas should close this library, and we shouldn't have a library that have a Bible in Gaza, though we have a minority of Christians actually in Gaza.
I compared a little bit to Turkey now. I have a Turkish heritage, and in Turkey, under Erdogan's rule, they of course also put their teachers, their government officials in the schools, etc. And they had like the ideological idea of to Islamize the society a bit more. But after a few years, after they installed all the Islamic schools, or like a majority of Islamic schools, there was like a counter movement that people were moving away from religion. So, and people turning more to Judaism or becoming more secular just out of spite or just because they saw the facade of it. So how do you analyze Islam and Islamism of Hamas? Because people who are Muslim, of course, they are interested in peace and living their lives, having a good life for themselves and their children. And most people I talk, of course, they are against the war, people who are not radicalized. So do we have some notion on that?
I think that Erdogan was trying to give the quote-unquote cute Islam, Islamism to the world. And yeah, they are also trying to do it now in Syria with this crazy guy. Anyway, in Gaza, I would say it's a bit different. It's a bit different because, no, Hamas was attached to two forces. One is the Islamic regime in Iran, and one is the Muslim Brotherhood. So we were importing this terrible ideology from two factions, and it was actually said during the revolution in Egypt in 2013 when the leader, Khayrat al-Shatir, who was the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood around the world, when he entered Gaza, he said that Hamas is the military arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. That was in a public speech. It's recorded, and you can find it online. At the same time, you have another faction of Hamas who's more attached to the Islamic regime in Iran. It's not only Hamas. You also have the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And those are terrible people. Like, the idea of jihad for them is centered. It's number one. You can never discuss this idea with those people. And as I said, it's not about Palestine and Israel for them. It's more about achieving this crazy idea of a big Islamic state.
A difficult topic. Of course, I see that there is a very hard influence of the regime in Iran and helping radicalize the people. But I have one more question. Do you see what role women in general played in Gaza?
It's a hard question that, I mean, when we look at Gaza, we shouldn't look at with the German with the German eye. We shouldn't look at the Gaza society with a Western eye, because as every Middle Eastern country, or most of them actually, women plays little to no role, unfortunately. And yeah, Gaza was one of those societies. Don't give me that look that we are a terrible society. The entire Middle East is at the same way. If you looked at Syria, if you looked at Jordan, if you looked at whatever country, they have play little to no role. But actually, we started to do some role. And if you looked at the protest during the war, there was a protest only for women in Gaza who opposed Hamas. And they protested also during the war, so I have much respect to them. Hopefully, with the future, they can play more role, but it wasn't easy for them to play this role in the Middle East on the one hand, and especially that we are ruled by Islamists who oppose giving the woman any role in the political or the social life.
Okay, so you say the oppression of Hamas was so strong that the society went kind of very quiet.
I mean, from 2006, and you can count 8 years, we had Fathi Hamad as an interior minister. And I remember back then when we were walking at the beach, even men were not allowed to wear a short. So you can imagine how it is for the woman. We had this morality police from them that if you are working with a woman that is not your wife or have a family relationship, you will be both arrested. So it's extremely hard for women to play such a role under such a totalitarian terrorist regime.
Yes. My last question before we open it up, and to get closer to the topic of this evening, what do you say? What can be a credible and also sustainable peace dialogue between Palestinians and Israelis, civil society? How can that look like? Do you see any concrete approaches hope?
I will get my magic trick. I told you about that. I would say that first and foremost, I think we all agree that Hamas must go for sure, because it's. I don't think we would have any hope for peace when they are ruling there. The same applies actually to the Israeli government, because I can't see Ben-Gvir or Smotrich handing the Palestinians a peace treaty right now. And for me, in my opinion, actually, I think that there is a criminals and war crimes that happened by this government. And for the better of the Israeli society and the Palestinian society, they both, the leadership must go. I wouldn't say that peace would come at the second day, but I would say if there was a role to be supported by the Arab states, especially the Gulf states, who had this process of de-radicalization, normalization, and having good relationship with Israel, they can also support on that. But still, both of us, we have to make some compromises. We, the Palestinians, we can't go with this stupid idea of armed resistance that we have been trying since 48 until now, and every time we see the consequences of it and we continue to repeat it. This is one thing. If we looked at the other side, there must also be compromises by the Israeli side, because I can't make peace while I'm seeing settlements expanded in the West Bank. We are now talking about more than 700,000 Israeli settlers illegally living in the West Bank. So they also must show the Palestinians, okay, if you dropped in one idea, we can't support you in another idea. But what we are seeing right now is quietly the opposite, unfortunately. So I would say that both leadership must go, and we should have something new in these two societies. And for us, especially the Palestinians, we have to give up on many taboos that we have been dealing with since 1948. And when I say taboos, one idea is this from the river to the sea idea, take all over the land. That would never happen, and it's immoral, and it shouldn't actually be discussed. This is one thing. The second thing, for example, the right of return. While it's legitimate, in my opinion, those people were displaced from their lands, but when I look right now, we are talking about 8 million. I can't see how I can put these people in what is right now the state of Israel. And unfortunately, we have been dealing with this taboo in every Palestinian, in every peace treaty, whether we are talking Oslo, Camp David, or whatever, and it all the time it makes a problems. And I think we should realize that it's not applicable. That doesn't mean the right is not legitimate. It's legitimate, and those people should be compensated, whether financially, relocated to other countries, not to continue living in this terrible situation, as it happens with every society after a war. It happened with Turkey and Greece, actually. So we can't continue with these taboos.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So, we are happy to hear your questions and start the discussion.
First of all, thank you. My question is regarding Qatar and other countries. Do you think it's a positive thing that they actually sent so much money to Gaza to maybe stabilize the Hamas? But of course, it relieves also people living there. Do you think it's a good thing, or should it be increase the pressure or whatever?
Actually, Qatar was supporting quote-unquote Gaza, which we are talking about Hamas, with $30 million each month on a monthly basis. And unfortunately, we saw where this money was going, because I was living there and I didn't benefit in any way from this money. And it was mostly used for this tunnel thing, for the rockets thing, for terrible stuff. And it's not only the money, because Qatar knows what they are doing. And if they actually wanted to support the Palestinian society, they could have given this money to the Palestinian Authority, which is the official authority of Gaza. But they were doing that and giving the money to a terrorist regime. This is one thing. The second thing is not only the money, but the propaganda machine that Qatar has for Hamas that was glorifying whatever they did. And I'm talking about Al Jazeera right now. Immediately after October the 7th, they started with this documentary showing how good what Hamas did and that they did not touch any civilian. And because of the language barrier, I would say, in Gaza, the people see these documentaries and they believe in it. If you looked at the poll by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Research Survey, more than 80% of Gazans believe that Hamas did not attack civilians on October the 7th. So this propaganda machine is washing whatever Hamas does, and as long as it continues in that, we will see, unfortunately, people believing in this propaganda. So I would say, if Qatar wants to support the Palestinians, they have to do it in the official way, to the official Palestinian Authority, not to a terrorist regime. This is at first. And they must stop with this glorification of Hamas, because they killed Israeli civilians and they continue to kill Palestinian civilians, actually, in Gaza. There is tons of videos online coming each day for Hamas torturing, shooting people because, quote-unquote, they stole a bag of flour, the same flour that was sent to the civilians. We see Hamas torturing the people who participated in the protest. And after all of that, it comes Al Jazeera and tells you how great Hamas are.
A little question regarding Al Jazeera and so on. Do you know where the people get their information? Like in Turkey, people use VPN to get news outside their state-run news agency, etc. Do you know if there are people who try to look beyond?
The problem in Gaza is they are limited with the language. They only know Arabic. And with the Arabic resources, you wouldn't find many good things. This is actually a big problem in Gaza. And I think for me, this was a benefit for me that I could have looked at other resources. I would say it's very hard, maybe with some local Telegram channels, but it's not enough. It's not enough at all. And I think it's also a step for the future to open another door for the Palestinians to see the Palestinian-Israeli conflict itself and how to solve it. Because as long as they go for these Arabic resources, they will continue with the glorifying it. And
differentiated between Hamas and the Palestinian government at a few points in your talk. Is there an actual difference between them after 20 years?
Between who?
Between Hamas and the Palestinian government.
Yes, actually. So the Palestinian Authority ruled Gaza after Israel withdrew from 2005 to 2006, very long period. But after Hamas took over the power, they killed many of them. I think it was 600 to 700 people. It was terrible scenes. The same scenes, actually, that you saw on October the 7th, how they dragged people with the motorcycles. It was, even when I saw October, I started to have these flashbacks of 2007. Anyway, after they attacked them, the majority of the Palestinian authorities' leadership went to the West Bank, which is the other part of the Palestinian territories, and they never made it. So, yes, I differentiate between them because, yes, the Palestinian Authority might be corrupt. They have lots of things to be criticized, but I wouldn't compare to them to Hamas, a jihadist Islamist regime.
Actually, I had the same question, but still I don't understand. How does it work when there is a Palestinian Authority in Gaza? How does it work when Hamas is ruling everything? So how can they... What is the Palestinian Authority doing in Gaza?
Yes. So... After Hamas attacked them in 2006, the Palestinian Authority had something around 60,000 employees in Gaza. We're talking police, government people, stuff like that. Hamas killed 600 to 700 of them, and the leadership of the Palestinian Authority ran to the West Bank, which is the other part of the Palestinian territory. It's not Gaza. It does not have anything to do with Gaza. Still, the employees continue to live in Gaza. Those 60,000 people are in Gaza right now. Many of them were killed, but still, they are in Gaza. And we have the leadership on the other side of the Palestinian territories. We have the Palestinian Authority there. I'm not a big fan of them. I criticize them. They are also not a very nice people. But as I said, they cannot be compared to Hamas. And unfortunately, we don't have much options when we talk about a new Palestinian leadership, because Hamas also crushed the Palestinian civil society thing. So... in a way or another, we should get the benefit of the Palestinian Authority when we are talking about a new government in Gaza.
Okay. First of all, thanks all also for organizing this. And I'm following you for 2 years, I guess. And I think, since I was living in Israel, Palestine 10 years ago, visiting many times, I'm speechless for more than 10 years in leftist all kinds in Germany, and voices like yours they are so, so important. I have two questions. First, personal. I don't know if you want to answer, but I saw online you also have some issues at the moment, like with staying right here in Germany, I guess because Greece, Schengen.
Yeah.
If you want to say something at this, like what is your, if there is anything to help you from here in Germany. And second question, to Gaza, because I was always wondering at this connection from Iran to Hamas, because Hamas is Sunni, Shia, Iran.
Islamic Republic.
Islamic Republic, yeah. Galanke, yes. And maybe you can, like, from how is this influence? Yes. Like this, yes.
So the first question about my living in Germany, it's not stable because, as I said, I applied for asylum here when I came to Germany. That was in March 2024. Since then, I'm living in this refugee shelter. And recently I got rejected. I got a deportation letter. Because of this Dublin law, they want to send me back to Greece. I tried to appeal to the case. My lawyer says it's not going well, and I have to consider where I'm gonna go actually in 1 or 2 months from here. So it wasn't very nice experience in Germany, but expected, I would say. The second thing about Hamas and Iran, when the Ayatollah and the revolution succeeded in a way or another in Iran, the idea when the Iranian regime started to publish for the Arab audience is that this revolution is not only limited to Shia. They said it. I think it's recorded. They say that this revolution is for all the Islamic society, and we are talking about Shia and Muslim. So Hamas used that in a way or another to say that, okay, we are the Sunni part of the Islamic revolution in Iran. I think the same applies to some fictions in Yemen, not all of them, because you have also some Shia there, but it also applies there. So the Islamic regime portrayed this revolution as if it was for every Muslim revolution. So they wanted to export it to every Middle Eastern country to make it, quote unquote, an Islamic country.
First of all, thank you for your talk. I am looking for my notes. I was wondering, why is it so hard to criticize Hamas and crimes done by the Israeli government or settlers and etc. at the same time? Because as you said, if the moment you criticize Hamas, it was instrumentalized by the Israeli government. Yes, and I think about it a lot because I feel like people always only see the things they want to see and only see the perspectives they want to hear. And yeah, I don't know if you think about something about it or if you have...
In Gaza, I think I already explained how it might end if you criticized Hamas. I gave the examples of Uday Nasser Rabai, he was tortured to death. So this about how is it to criticize Hamas in Gaza, it's just a death sentence, I would say. But if you are talking outside of Gaza, you want to criticize Hamas and the actions of the Israeli government, you are picking a lots of enemies, actually. Lots of people going to hate you, lots of people going to throw shit at you, so... It's hard, but I think it's necessary. It's necessary because there is nothing like this. Oh, those are the pure good people. Those are the pure bad people. I think we saw lots of crimes. I mean, a few days ago, 11 Palestinian children were killed by an Israeli airstrike while they were trying to get some water. And after that, the IDF said it was a mistake. So no, bad things happen from the two sides. I do not want to make comparisons or to equalize one with the other, but I would say... This is the only way I see, actually, this is how I see it should be done. And if we want a better future peace, or let's say downsize the scale of violence, we should start by being honest with ourselves.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. You mentioned that you fled from Gaza before 7th of October and went to Cairo. How is this working? Do you just can pass the border, or have you pay some militaries or use the tunnels? And maybe if you also can say it, how did it change after October 7th?
This is actually why I mentioned the open air prison idea or something like that, because in my opinion, it's a misnomer. Yes, we were seized, but if someone wants to leave the Gaza Strip officially, he can do that from the Egyptian side. For sure, you have to pay. And it's not with the tenants, it's official leaving. So you can just leave with a car. This is one option. The other option, which was not that open, I would say, from the Israeli side, but still it was applied to many people. But the most way that was used by Palestinians, it's the Gaza, the Rafah border to Egypt. It was official.
Important allies of Hamas, like Hezbollah and Islamic Republic, are badly bruised after the 12-day war and the fallout in Syria and the bombings. Do you already see some effects? What do you think this will hold for the future for Gaza?
I mean, before the war, for sure, there was this crazy alliance between Hamas and Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Islamic regime in Iran. Houthis were not that public back then, but still there was this alliance. And I remember when Qasem Soleimani was killed by the American forces in Iraq, I think, Hamas started by putting posters for him in all over Gaza, especially in the known streets. Many people in Gaza actually didn't have any idea who's this guy. And they opened something like, I don't know how we can say that, like after the funeral thing, I don't know, to mourn like the kill of Qasem Soleimani. And some people were actually angry at that. One of them is a friend of mine, and they tore these posters the second day, and they were arrested for it. So for them, even criticizing the Islamic regime in Iran is not an option. The same actually happened during the war when the Iranian foreign minister and other officials were killed in this helicopter thing. They did the same. Some people in Gaza distributed some baklava, and they were arrested for it because it's not an option. But I would say right now we are talking about different axes. I mean, there is almost no Hezbollah. They did not even interfere when it was with the Islamic regime. It's very much weakened. Still, it exists, but it's very much weakened. And the same, I think, for the Islamic regime, because they understood that the time of a green light is ended, and they will be bombed or punished if they did something. Especially also with the fall of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, so they cut this lifeline. But this is the issue with the Arab countries, that yes, everything happened and we are now reshaping a new Middle East, but we don't have any say in that. I can't see the Arab countries saying, okay, we have now the alternative, or someone ready to take the control of, for example, this country, or to reshape the new Middle East. This is our problem, that we are all the time react to what happens. We wait for the people, the Western countries or whatever, or for Israel to do something, and then we react to it. But we cannot reshape ourselves.
I have a question about your activism. Back in 2019, you said you had this movement, and media didn't speak about that. But were there any other allies you had contact with, like in the rest of Palestine and the West Bank or in Israel, or was there no chance to have contact?
And unfortunately, when we talk about Gaza and the West Bank, I sometimes, when I think of it, I feel it's actually two different countries, because after the second Intifada and the bombings that happened there, Israel stopped closed the way between Gaza and the West Bank, so we became totally disconnected. And right now, when I look at the society in the West Bank, it's completely different from the one in Gaza. We are not connected in any way. But that was also something that we wanted in the movement itself. We did not want to be supported by any political faction or any foreign country, because we wanted that to be the people's movement. And because we did not want to reshape Palestine at all, we just wanted elections, and then the people can choose whatever they want, and for some economic improvements in Gaza.
So I have a question about the media reporting. So I would say we have an imbalance of the media reportings to the war parties. You mentioned the protest in 2019, and this was new to me. So my question is, how can we get informations like this to publish them here? Because I think a big problem in left discussion or discussion in general, there are like this polarization and we can't get between this.
I would say that the lack of coverage was, yes, in a way for... they were not interested, I would say, the international media about it because, yeah, clearly Israel is not involved, so it's not that important topic. This is one thing. The other thing is also we have a problem right now that Hamas also controls what comes from Gaza's media. And we have the third problem, which is happening during the war, that Israel is not allowing international journalists to enter into the Gaza Strip. So we are left with only one thing, which is Al Jazeera, the only media outlet that has people on the ground. And what happens with Al Jazeera is that they report whatever they want. For example, during the protests that happened during the war, the anti-Hamas protests, they took it and they cut some parts of it that when people were chanting against Hamas and they said there is an anti-war protest in Gaza. They did not mention Hamas at all. And what happens is that, unfortunately, some Western media outlets, they start taking it from Al Jazeera, for example. The pattern that I notice is that it's Al Jazeera, then Reuters, then you will have it everywhere. So I would say many people should be criticized for that. Hamas, Israel for not allowing international journalists while being left with the propaganda. For me, the way I try to get my news is just from local Telegram channels whom somehow I trust because I know the people behind them. But still, it's not easy, actually, to get verifiable information with such a situation.
Thank you again. I have two questions. One of them, if you can explain Intifada. And the second one is, as I lived in Iran, we hated people in Palestine. We hated all the people. We couldn't separate Palestinian from Hamas. We didn't know that. And also because the Islamic Republic of Iran, everyone had or has a kufia. They are calling for Palestine, and that's our struggle, and Islam is our struggle, blah, blah, blah. We had hate feelings to Palestinian people from Palestine. My second question is, how are the feeling from the people in Palestine to Iranian to the Islamic Republic of Iran? Can they separate Iranian people from the Islamic regime or not?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why. I'm not justifying, but I understand why many Iranians don't love anything to be attached anything about Palestine because they see that their regime is pouring all its resources, all its millions to support these terrorist regimes, and the Iranian people are living in poverty, sanctions surrounded. So I'm not expecting flowers after that. So yeah, it's understood. I'm not saying it's okay, but I say that I understand it. I see where it's from where it's coming, and yeah, it's hard actually to explain this, but. The same is for the people in Gaza because they see that Hamas is still there and we cannot uproot Hamas because it's supported from the Iranian regime. Unfortunately, we also don't differentiate. but no, I would say it's mostly directed to the regime itself. Like it's not more focused on the Iranian people itself. But we also understand that how oppressed they are because, hey, they are the regime, they are the teachers, and we are seeing how their sons in Hamas are, what they are doing to us. So we can imagine what happens there. And I mean, I personally, as we were speaking outside, I told you the Iranian victims that I met, and I realized when I talked to them that, there is more authoritarian and terrorist regime than Hamas. When I talked to those people, I realized how terrible is this idea, and yeah, hopefully we'll have a better future than that. Intifada, I'm sorry. Intifada in Arabic means revolution. This where the word comes from. And in Palestine, we had two intifadas. One in the 80s, it was not about suicide bombs, I would say. The first one in the 80s, and There was for sure violence, there was killing, but yeah, it was not that violent. But the second intifada, some factions in the Palestinian territories supported by the Iranian regime did not like the Oslo Accords or the peace accords that was happening back then, and they wanted to disrupt that. And the only way to disrupt that is that the Iranian regime started to pour millions to those people to have guns, to have bombs, everything. And what they try to do is to terrify the Israeli society so they can abandon this agreement. And I think they succeeded in doing so, because you have the extreme right-wingers in Israel who assassinated Rabin back then. And we have Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad who started to do suicide bombs in cafes, in school buses, in literally children's school buses, in any place, in any civilian place you can think of. There was suicide bombs in everywhere. And if someone lived in the Israeli society back then, they can assure you that the term safety did not exist. Many people were terrified, and some factions of the society started to say, are those the people who we are trying to do peace with? So they succeeded in disrupting these peace accords. And this is where this word is coming from. And right now, a few days ago, actually, I was in Berlin trying to talk to the left there for the Die Linke. And yeah, some people responded immediately with doing another event, how to globalize the Intifada. Four people from there, from the Die Linke. They did not want to say, let's do a ceasefire, let's pressure Hamas and Israel to do a ceasefire or more humanitarian aid or anything. No. The idea with solidarity with Palestine for them was how we can do intifada in the West. And I think some should pay attention to that, because they will not spread flowers with intifadas.
I have a direct question and then I'll come back to you. The thing is, you have a very unique position. You speak English, you have a large following on social media, and you are here in Europe and travel a lot, and you go to a lot of talks and speaks and meet a lot of people. And regarding some parts of the left who see the 7th of October or any violent acts committed by Hamas as some sort of resistance, do you encounter people who tell that to your face?
So first, before I talk about these people, I think I wrote that a few days ago, that the Palestinian society has, like, I don't like this victimhood narrative about us. Yes, we have lots of, but I don't want to be obsessed with it. But when I look at Germany, the Palestinians are being surrounded with two things. One is the stupid left who wants to globalize the Intifada, who has zero idea about what's happening there. They take this war as a political stage to spread other ideas about... it's not about Palestine as much as it's about Israel. So it's a stage for them. It's a theater. For other parts, it's just a backdoor to hide and spread anti-Semitism or other terrible ideas. And some of them were celebrating when October the 7th happened. There is social media posts that is documented for some people. On the other hand, you have some parts of the right wing who are racist towards Palestinians, who see the Palestinian as a terrorist until you prove otherwise. And I personally encountered some stuff from that. So yeah, this is about the left and the right in Germany. And yes, sometimes I meet some of them when I do some events in Berlin, who come to shout. I don't know, sometimes they do not shout actually about Intifada, but they wait for me to finish so they can say free Palestine, and I would say, okay, I also want a free Palestine. or some people who actually literally came to my event and they were like, how you can speak about Gaza when there is a genocide? Like, I should wait for a German to talk about Gaza, and I myself should be silent because there is a genocide or a war. So I don't want to go to this because I can't stop myself.
Yeah, thanks for being here and telling everything about your life. It's very interesting to hear, and I'm very astonished by your bravery. But my question is... you said we see the waves from the conflict coming here in Germany, for example, the left choosing weird sides and determining or choosing sides in general. But I also, what I believe to observe is that in the Arabic world, the Hamas is seen as a hero, and a lot of countries use it to support Muslim Brotherhood, to support other Islamic groups? And what's your view on the influence, or can you also see that the conflict in Gaza and Hamas is used to radicalize a lot of countries and a lot of people in the countries to solidify or to actually change to a Muslim state again?
Yeah, I mean, first about, I just want to make this disclaimer that about the protest that happens actually in Germany, because for sure people have the right to free speech, they have the right to protest, they have the right to say we want war, we want this war to stop, Hamas to go out, hostages to be free. Like, they have the right, but not to use that to glorify or to use it to infiltrate more violence, not only in Palestine and Israel, but also here in Germany, especially here. So the interesting thing about the Arab countries is that you have a protest in almost every Western country. I can't think of any Arab country that has a single protest about the war. That's not allowed. In Emirates, you will be jailed. In Saudi Arabia, the same. It's, maybe in Jordan, there was one, but now they prohibited it because they catched some Hamas cells who were trying to develop rockets in Jordan. But I can't think of, in Egypt, it did not happen. In Lebanon, it did not happen. There, in Syria, maybe, yes. Anyway, the official position of the governments, I would say, is against Hamas. If we are talking about Saudi Arabia, Emirates, they completely oppose Hamas, and actually their condition to finance the rebuilding of Gaza is one condition: Hamas is out of there, because they got tired, actually, of Hamas every time infiltrating a war. Gaza is destroyed, they pay for the rebuilding, and the cycle goes on. So they made this condition that Hamas must be out. But if you looked at the society, it's a different scenario. Unfortunately, in many, not all of them, in many Arab countries, there is a support for Hamas. I mean, for me, actually, in the refugee shelter, when I talk to Arab people, once I mention I'm from Palestine or Gaza, I start hearing this rhetoric. I don't discuss it. I say yes to whatever they say. And I can see this level of radicalism, as I said, from the Arab media, because I can't think of a single Arab media outlet that opposes Hamas. It's all glorifying Hamas, and there is nothing to combat or push that, unfortunately. So it's scary, actually. And I myself, I don't prefer to go into any discussion with those people.
Hi, thanks for your talk. I was just wondering why there's such a big disconnection between the official position of the government and the media, which is partially, I guess, controlled by those governments.
Actually, it's not the case in some countries. For example, I will go to Egypt's example. In Egypt, you have the government who were fighting the Muslim Brotherhood after the revolution from, let's say, from 2018, from 2011, actually. So the state was opposing the Muslim Brotherhood. They were also opposing the jihadists who were in Sinai for many years, and some of them were actually from Hamas. Some Hamas operatives infiltrated to Sinai, and they were fighting against the Egyptian army. Some of them were arrested, and one of them was actually, I think, the cousin of Yahya Sinwar. Anyway, so the state itself has no interest in going to support Hamas, especially after they spent, I think, $3 billion to fight terrorism in Sinai and in Egypt itself as a Muslim Brotherhood. This is one thing. But the thing about Egypt is that the government, I would say, is they are cowards when they want to reshape or change the religious discourse. Because, yes, they did that, but you also have the Azhar institution in Egypt, which is the top Islamic institution in Egypt. And they couldn't do any reform in this institution, which actually supported October the 7th, and they posted about that. So the government, I would say, they are afraid to reshape that or to combat it, because unfortunately the society loves this institution. I'm talking about Al-Azhar institution. They love it, and they support it more than they support the government itself. For them, Al-Azhar has been existing since many decades, actually, and it cannot be criticized. And this is the problem with Egypt. But if you went to Saudi Arabia, no, it's not the case. The MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, was more brave when he reshaped his country. He opposed anything that is attached to Islamism or Wahhabism. And there, no, you have a totally different society when they think about Palestine and Israel thing.
Yeah, thanks again. In your talk, you were also mentioning that in your mind, both regimes had to be abolished or like be terminated so that there can be a sustainable peace between the two countries. So, and I wonder, do you have like any ideas what an after abolishment or after this regime's period could be looked like, or what you would like say is realistic? Is it like interim's regime, or is it like a self-rebuilding society? So what are like the plays you have played in your mind? I know I'm talking here like really conjunctive, but yeah, what is what you would have in mind?
Yeah, I will talk about the Palestinian society. I think Israelis can decide whatever they want. It's up to them. But for the Palestinian society, I would say that it's not a good time to have elections after this war, because I think we are not ready for the democracy thing yet. But I would say that we should have a kind of an interim government for 5 or 8 years. And this government should be Palestinian. I'm not an advocate of saying that the Israeli army should occupy Gaza or just to give it to another country or to send them out of Gaza. I'm totally against that. So I would say it should be a Palestinian technocratic interim government. What I'm trying to say is that those people shouldn't be much politically attached to Hamas, to the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, just independent people who can lead the country for 5 to 8 years. And during this time, as I said, we can benefit from the Arab states' experience with the de-radicalization, with having more tolerance in Gaza. And yeah, after those 5 or 8 years, we can have elections and pick a new government, for example. And there are some names that I can think of. For example, the ex-Palestinian Prime Minister, Salam Fayyad, who was amazing, in my opinion, and he can take such a role. You have other figures like Mohammed Dahlan, who is in Emirates right now. So I think if those people got a chance, we will have, it wouldn't be a perfect, but a very much better Gaza.
Then I have one question. Where do you see Hamas now, after all the destruction going on and a lot of their head people were being killed? The elite of Hamas is weakened, but I'm sure there's a lot of recruiting still going on because of all the suffering we see. How do you see that?
I would say that first, it's not only weakened. I would say, like, when I think of Hamas's top military command, I can think of many names, because Haniya, Sinwar, Daif, whatever, they were all killed. There is only one name right now, Azzeddin al-Haddad. But we are talking about one name. This is one thing. The other thing, as you say, there was a new recruitment. But for me, I wouldn't say it's that terrifying, because the Hamas that we have today is not Hamas that was sending thousands of rockets to Israel in a day or an hour. This is one thing. The other thing, the new people who are being recruited during this war, I don't actually take them that seriously, because I'm talking about people who were not trained. Those people were like, they were recruited during the war. So yes, they might be dangerous, but I wouldn't say that it's compared to Hamas that we had in 6th of October or 7th of October. This is one thing. And I would say that for that, I don't take the terms of Netanyahu, for example, the absolute victory or total elimination of Hamas. This is absolute stupidity, in my opinion. Even here in Germany, post-World War II, they did not kill each Nazi. You cannot do that, actually. It can't be done. This is one thing. And also, you cannot go after Hamas's remaining people with a bombardment. Those people, you have to open the chance for the Arab forces and the Palestinian Authority, who said it publicly that we are willing to clash with Hamas to take over the power. It wouldn't be perfect, as I said, but I see it as the most applicable solution right now, because what's happening cannot be accepted under any terms. And also for the recruitment, I mean, I'm not a military expert and I might be wrong, but from what we heard from Gaza, for 2 to 3 months, it actually stopped, and the people who are recruited, they are actually not getting their money. So it's just a matter of time until they stop whatever they are doing. Because, and the reason for that, because Hamas was stopped from hijacking the humanitarian aid to sell it and make money to pay for those people.
Ideologically, one of the main goals of Hamas is the destruction of Israel. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there might be a shift in the ideology or in how they see the world? I don't know.
Yes, I mean, we are not worse than previous Germany and Japan, we saw that happens in Saudi Arabia. The society in Saudi Arabia used until 10 years, I used to believe that it must be an Islamic state. The same applies to Emirates. People now look at Dubai and they want to go to Dubai, but look at Dubai 10 years earlier. They also wanted an Islamic state, and it happens right now. So no, we are not weirdos. It can be done. It will take time for sure. It wouldn't happen in a night. I would say it at least would take 10 years, but still, the sooner we start, the better for us.
We heard your voice today, but I know there are some other institutions or organizations who also spread the idea of peace and getting to know the different perspectives, etc., like a realign for Palestine. Do you know any other institutions who you could recommend us to follow or to...
I mean, it depends on what you are looking for. But for me personally, I look for... Standing together most of the time, because I think they did many good things during this war. There is an institution here also. They are based actually in Köln, I think. Palestinians and Jews for Peace or something like that. Those are the two main organizations that I follow most of the time. But I mean, I think there is a lot of them, but the idea is how to support them, because even like... Before the war, there was many peace institutions in Israel, but right now they are being cut from the support that they used to have from the government. So it's being weakened and weakened, and I think they deserve the support because, it's a very hard job to do, especially during the war.
So if there is anyone who just had another notion for a question, this would be the last chance. Yeah. How should we proceed?
We go outside because it's hot.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming. Yeah.